And we give everybody a couple more minutes. There you go. Let's see where we are in times. Got a minute to go. There we are. We were waiting on you, Paula.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
No, we didn't want to start without you.
I would not one of you wanted you to start without me.
Mean, you just have a couple of last minute arrivals. Okay, I think we're ready. Excuse me. Take a moment to become aware of our connection with one another. And all beings who are consciously tuning into a higher consciousness. And we might also include all of those who are unconscious of their reaching for that same thing. It's my sense that all beings, no matter what planet, no matter what dimension, are all yearning for the same thing, that sense of oneness. Wholeness, completion. Because so many of us have been on this journey, perhaps many times, our ability to reach the depths of our being has become more sophisticated. We are given books and classes like this. We look around at other beings that are so wounded that they're in their search for peace, they simply create more chaos. And instead of judging them, my heart breaks with their pain because I've experienced that before myself. So have you. I don't even forgive them for their stuckness. I give myself the opportunity to raise them, to raise their vibration to one of light and peace. To realize what the Buddhists say, that the boat doesn't leave until everybody's on it. Or as Ram Dass said more gently, we're all walking one another home. And as we allow that energy to surround us and fill us, let us also be open to our own ability to stretch, to grow, to become. Well, good morning. We're going a little bit off script this Sunday to explore something that has come up periodically with this class on Sunday morning and also our class on Tuesday evening. And I'll try to word it as simply as I can, but I'm going to sort of step back a little bit because I want to get one other people to give their impressions and their ideas and their process. Question comes down to, why does it seem we are drawn towards the negative side of things to focus on? Limitation, anger, fear, judgment. Why does that seem to take up an abnormal sense of space in our awareness, in our growth, in our spiritual becoming? You might have your own words for expressing that or explaining that, but I'm just going to kind of leave that piece open, and it's open to anybody who would like to comment on it or explore it on any further. So, it's all yours. Hey, John.
I think I go to the negative because it's my go-to place to go. That first knee-jerk reaction. I think I won't be disappointed if I go negative.
Okay.
And then,
when you say your knee-jerk reaction, what's the external stimulus?
Fear, I feel threatened.
Okay, so fear enters the picture, and then what happens?
It takes a long time to change my mind.
Okay, I get it's like in Uncle Remus, the tar baby. You're familiar with the tar baby in Uncle Remus? I can go into a lot of detail, but basically, Brer Rabbit was a trickster. And he was always kind of getting himself in trouble. And I think it was Brer Fox created what he called a tar baby. It was a little mannequin that was made out of soft, sticky tar. And he turned himself into a little bit of a tranquiloquist and started making fun of Brer Rabbit. And Brer Rabbit got really ticked off and went to punch him. Of course, when he went to punch him, his hand got stuck. So he tried to extricate his hand, and he couldn't do it. So he put his foot up to push away the tar so he could get himself free. But he got his foot stuck in. Now the only way he knew how to get out was pushing with his other hand. And of course, by the end of the story, he gets all tangled up in something that he wanted to escape from to begin with. And so that might be one of the models we use here, is the tar baby model. We don't realize we're getting stuck, but we realize we're stuck or we're doing the wrong method when it's too late, right? We're already stuck. We're already there. As you said, John, you know, it sort of overtakes us. It's a knee-jerk reaction. Somebody shows up in my life that I can't stand. Now, I could be in the most wonderful mood in the world, and as soon as I start thinking about so-and-so, bam, And it takes me a while, takes me a while to get unstuck. But another additional thing that happens to me is I get pissed off at myself for getting caught again. So here I am stuck in the tar baby and creating another one that's going to stick me a little bit more. Don?
Yeah, I think of that as a rabbit hole. Once you start going down a rabbit hole, man, I think it's hard to.
You can sort of put your arms and your legs out, but you're still going, right? So that might be a question to explore, maybe not even today, but what sends you down the rabbit hole? Now, the flip side of that is what sends you into higher consciousness? Oh, never thought of that. Isn't it? I mean, we start off with the whole idea that it's almost natural for us to do that. It seems to be natural for us to fall into that sticky negative side of things. Anybody else want to throw some stuff out there? Yeah, Eric?
I read a book recently that.
Can you all hear him okay? Okay, good.
I read a book recently called Real Love by Greg Bear. And I kind of believe what he said, that if you're going down the rabbit hole, if you're frustrated, the only thing that can relieve that frustration is feeling love.
Okay.
And so you have to feel love.
The only thing I would change with that, Eric, is instead of saying feeling, because feelings are so fickle sometimes, experiencing love.
Yeah, get love.
That'd be okay?
Experience. Sure.
That's just my stuff, which I have a load of. Okay, floor's open.
Anytime I associate fear, I associate with worry.
Worry?
Worry.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't worry about anything.
Okay.
I mean, my mother was the greatest worrier. I mean, a cloud could appear in the sky, she thought we were going to get a tornado. I mean, I'm not lying to you on that. That's the truth. And anytime we go out, she worried about us. I mean, we're out. I mean, and she, I don't know. I don't know. She was like a negative person. She was a loving person. She loved us, and we knew that. We cared for her. She worried all the time about anything. And I just don't worry. I just...
For many people, Linda, worry is a way of, it doesn't work. Don't get me wrong about this. But it's a way of, a seeming way of protecting themselves. If I worry about it and it happens, I'll be prepared.
I think that, yeah.
Okay. I remember this is years and years ago when I was a little kid, looking at our little 10-inch screen TV set, black and white, with a great big cabinet. Cabinet was bigger than the TV was. And I think it was on Monday or Tuesday, I'm not sure which, but this Catholic show was on. Bishop Sheen was a Catholic bishop. And I still remember some scenes from that show as a little kid. And one of the things he said that really struck me, I was about 4 or 5 years old, I guess. He said, worry. Worry is another form of atheism. And that really got my attention. Worry is another form of atheism. I said I was going to shut up, so I'm going to shut up. I can't stop myself sometimes. Linda.
I always thought, and this came to be, so it just played into it more. I always thought if I worried about it, it wouldn't happen. But if I didn't worry and plan, then it would.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I worried and planned, and it didn't happen, I just thought, okay, I have to keep doing this.
So,
so I lived like that for a long time, but it just wore me out. And then finally, I'm not totally over it, but.
So would you say it was a form of protection? I mean, it didn't work, who is it? If fear had a voice, it would say, hold on to me and I will keep you safe. Doesn't work, but to my limited self, it sounds very, very appetizing. Makes sense. Hold on to me and I'll keep you safe. Yeah, Don?
And the other thing I'm reading across was somebody said that if you go negative, you stay negative, you won't be disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you go negative, you'll be prepared for the worst.
And then when it happens,
If it doesn't happen, well, you know, the rest is kind of gravy. That's cool. Now, what's next? Of course, there's always going to be something left in the box to be worrying about.
I recently went up to Chicago. I took a Greyhound bus up. My daughter and her husband were going to come up and see us later. My daughter was so afraid. She said, "You're going to get on that bus and somebody's got to rob you." Well, you choose to think that. I choose to think I'm going to get on that bus and nobody's going to rob me, you know? It's just a choice.
Yeah, Laura. Hey, you know, this is really interesting. We have more comments coming from the live audience than we do from the electronic one. So you guys better get on your toes here. Okay, Laura.
I think for me, it's about safety. And I think when you first brought the subject up, I thought, you know, it goes back generations and it comes through my body. I guess to me, it's like in the body that some of those things are. And the gentleman said down there, what came to me is like if I'm in one of those modes, I'm not really in my body anymore. If I have an anger thing or if I've got fear, I am not even here. It's like I'm disconnected. And what I thought could bring me back is just reconnecting. Because I do this, I'm back inside my body. So that's my
getting grounded again.
Just remembering who I am. I mean, if I connect with me, I know that I'm here and there's really nothing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to be in fear. I don't have to be angry. I can just be.
And breathing, as you said, is a great reminder of that. You'll hear that piece of advice or direction coming from spiritual teachers all over the place. No matter what's going on with you, especially if you're uptight or getting lost or heading down the rabbit hole, stop for a minute, breathe. In 12-step literature, it says, we learn to pause when agitated. Instead of getting sucked into the agitation, right, we stop for a moment. Didn't say breathe, but it kind of hinted at that. Stop. Pause, breathe, get back to center. And then you might still be in some negativity, but you'll have some tools to be able to use to be able to get out of there or not get stuck. Matt?
Last night, I was sitting above the Ohio River at a winery, listening to beautiful music sung by my daughter, part of Gilderoy Byrne. The sun was going down, and I'm looking around, and I say, this is it.
Yes. This is it. This is it.
And then my thought went, there's a paper mill across the river. What if that started spewing smell? And I'm starting to breathe to see if I can find that smell. And there's a table next to us, and there's a guy smoking a pipe.
Oh.
Even if the paper mill was, I wasn't going to be able to smell it. But what it made me realize at that point in time, how much am I missed by looking for something that is somehow going to take away
mm.
the perfect. Seems like we're always going after the perfect. And we're always saying, well, what else could there be that could somehow make this less than what I want it to be? And in doing that, I realized, you know, how much I miss
mm-hmm.
not only this, but all the time. And if I could just take a little bit of time and recognize that this is it,
mm-hmm.
because it probably is.
I think that's beautiful, Matt. Thank you. I'm often, you know, I appreciate the way you've handled that. There are some times when I come to a realization that here I am hunting for perfection and not enjoying the present moment. And then I start beating myself up for doing that. You kind of eased yourself out of that negative thinking and held on, or not held on, but allowed yourself to be influenced by the beauty that you were experiencing. Let me get back to the beauty I was experiencing 30 seconds ago. Okay. And it might not last, but at least I know I have a choice.
Jerry?
Yeah, hey, hi, Greg.
Good to see everybody. I would like to state that throughout the years of 12 steps and spiritual groups like this, I've become less attracted to the negative and the drama and the dark news and the horror movies. And even like you had mentioned, boxing and UFC, which I used to love, it just kind of has lost its charge anymore. It seems like it. Why are we attracted to the negative? Seems like it goes back to some physiological wiring about the tiger lurking in the jungle or the invading Mongol hordes or whatever, where it fear says, hold on to me and I'll keep you safe. It's trying to arrange the world so that I can survive. And the ego and its opinions and preferences also, through the same thing, says, hold on to me and I will keep you safe. We know that dark news and drama sells. That's why they put it on TV. There's a little bit of a jolt, an excitement in it as well. There's a physiological, I think, reaction that happens in it. And in the past, when I have judged or gossiped about somebody, it felt like it propped up my ego a little bit, like it made me feel a little better than, which made me feel safe. I think the same thing extends to, why do people have a political opinion or they have a version of religion that they need to convince other people to believe as they do, rather than embracing all the people's different beliefs? If I can convince people that I'm right, it makes me feel better. It makes me feel safer in what I believe. So it all comes back to that statement you said, fear says, hold on to me and you'll be safe. It's a lie. And the truth is, the more that I look at fearful things, the more that I'm going to manifest them, you know. And there are times, you know, if there's a tornado warning, if I want to be physically safe, I need to check out where that thing's at. but yeah, it's part of its wiring, part of its programming. And most of the things we don't have to fear of anymore. But the wiring is still there in my, it's still there in my physiology. It's still there in my hormones and all that. That's my take on it, is it's still kind of leftover physiology from the way we're wired.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah.
Psychologists and physiologists would call that the lizard brain, right? Is the part of me that just reacts and is there essentially to keep me safe, right? Because, you know, there might be a monster behind the rock coming up. There might be a dinosaur after me. The interesting piece that I sat with this when I wrestled with this a little bit myself was, when I am working out of my perception through my lower or limited consciousness, that's where the negativity comes in clean. When I am looking at myself or looking at other people, looking at my life situation through my divine self, through the upper room, through my higher consciousness, that fear does not exist. So much of what I am attracted to in a fearful nature for protection or whatever reason you want to put that is coming from my limited perception of who I am. When I raise my perception of who I truly am, I'm not in that struggle anymore. I am able to experience myself in a higher reality. So when I, and this might be overly simplified, when I find myself in anger or fear or judgment or needing safety, any one of those mechanisms that John described as a knee-jerk reaction or falling down the rabbit hole, when I find myself doing that, if I'm aware enough, I can begin to recognize that that's me looking at myself in a lower consciousness level or in a way that in a very limited, I'm looking at myself in a very limited way, who I am. I'm afraid, I'm fearful, I'm judgmental, I'm this, I'm that, I'm not. That's coming from my my identification. That might be a good word to use. That's coming from my identification with my lower consciousness. Now, as Greg pointed out, I don't ignore that, but I put it in its place. So that when I am, if I'm walking down a dark street in a neighborhood that I'm not terribly familiar with, it's probably a good idea for me to be on my toes. That doesn't have to be judgmental. It's just, you know, as somebody said, if the tornado warning is coming through, it'd be a good idea for me to listen to that. Yeah, Don?
I think another aspect of that is emotional response you're going through, or if you are going through emotional response. Because I've always, I mean, for me, rationality, emotion and rationality are like two ends of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody's going through an emotional response, I think of it like a little kid throwing a tantrum. You can't really talk to the child while they're in their tantrum. You only
right.
have to wait until they're out of it. And then you might be able to, you know, talk some sense to them or talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what fear does to me. It wraps around, you know, my,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not a thinking person. I'm just kind of a, you know, fight or flight mode. And, you know, my ration. You know. So I just got to breathe and get out of it. And then I might be able to be human.
So when you separate yourself from the feelings,
yeah, well, it's like news. So the first thing they do is talk about killing us. You know, they try to get you fearful.
Mm-hmm.
If they get you fearful, gentle, emotional response, then you're hooked. And you're along for the ride. But it's that type.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what helps you get out of that?
I breathe. And I try to turn off my thinking mind, and I try to turn it inward.
Okay.
And I breathe and feel, you know, my heart, and I look to other, you know, to
open up your, what some people would say, open up your heart space.
Yeah.
And we have a choice about that. Thing about it is that that grabs a lot of people, and me included, is that even when I open up my heart space to settle down the center around the truth of who I really am, my feelings don't change right away. My feelings don't change with the speed of light or the speed of thought. It takes a while for my emotional self to catch up with my spiritual self, if you want to put it that way. And I think that's a misnomer that a lot of us fall into. If I change my thinking, I'm going to change my feeling. Well, eventually that's going to be true, but not right away. Right? Even when I move my awareness into higher consciousness, there's still going to be part of me that's shaken and acting out, you know, and maybe even very fearful. What I'm doing or what I'm saying here is that what we're shifting in consciousness here is I am not identifying myself with that emotional self. It's there. It's doing whatever it's doing, but it's not who I am. Another piece to that puzzle, passed on by one of our teachers, who said, you know, we usually think that our emotional self is attached to feeling good or feeling nice or in control or whatever. She said, not really. Your emotional self is attached to intensity. So we would much rather feel something really, really deeply, even if it's what we might call negative, but it's attracted to the intensity of that rather than the feeling itself.
Gary?
That made an awful lot of sense to me. Yeah.
Do you think, I'm kind of thinking about what Greg was talking about, and I saw something in the chat with Rob. But anger, like the negativity or anger type thing, is, could this be in our long, long ago thing being more attuned to dangers for survival,
mm-hmm.
that we have those remnants of still gravitating to that high energy, like negativity feels like a high energy. Love, peace are more mellow in their feeling, even though we can't say higher consciousness, but just talking about energy. So we gravitate almost instinctively to a threat. So when we hear bad news, when something really is in that type of area going on, we gravitate to that energy level of the threat that is kind of a held over response to survival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's also what Greg was getting at. Is
yes, that's why it rang that little bell in me, what he was talking about.
I mean, you can even make that into a physiological awareness, that if all of a sudden I was to make a loud noise, part of me just almost automatically tenses up. Or let's say if a car outside backfired, we are programmed to be aware of that. And, you know, it's kind of like Danger Will Robinson. we're not necessarily attracted to that, but that's as somebody put it, I think it was Laura, that's how we're wired. And that's how my lower self is wired. And I'm not going to get rid of that. That's not going to disappear, right? At least not right away. But we do have, I think one of the things we're getting at here is we do have some choices, not necessarily about how I feel, but how I respond to a particular situation. Sangi.
I was going to just say, I remember what Greg had said earlier about Paula.
Okay.
About the news and negativity.
Mm-hmm.
That intensity is what draws us.
And you had a really interesting thing to say, I think it was last week, when we first asked this question. Why do we get drawn to the negative side of things? All right. And you said, because we're good at it.
Yeah. I was thinking Greg was talking.
Okay. And I like that. Because we are well practiced in negativity. But we want to word that a little bit differently. We are well practiced in identifying ourselves with our lower consciousness, with thinking that's who we are. And from that connection, from that identification with my lower self, my ego, my personality self, from that connection, from that, that's where my negativity, I'm going to call it that. My small self doesn't call it negativity, it calls it safety. That's where my small self comes into the picture. It's my identification with this aspect of who I am that is sort of in charge of how I respond to external stimuli, including my thoughts, my memories, my ideas. Yeah, Matt?
In 1995, I was sitting in a Cracker Barrel off Brook Street, and I saw a bunch of people standing by the window, and they were looking out. I went and looked out too, and there was a full-blown tornado. Everything about a tornado that you would think about was right there in front of me. I was there by myself and my six-year-old, my five-year-old, and my two-year-old. And at that point in time, the fear, not only for what might be about to happen, but my fear for my children was very intense. And they gathered us, all the manager came and gathered us all. We went back into the kitchen, and I laid across my two-year-old and my four-year-old. And a man who I didn't know laid himself across my six-year-old. And then, you know, the train rumbling, the building shaking, everything happening. And as I did that, the gratitude that I had for this man, who I did not know, and placing himself over my child. And, you know, people praying and the fear that was there. But there was also beauty. That was there. The beauty that we were all together in this. Whatever was going to happen, we were there together. And we would make the best of whatever happened. So even in fear, I learned that. Even in fear, even in uncertainty, there is compassion and there's beauty if we're aware of it. You know, even like what's going on in this world, right? There's a lot of fear. But if you know, there's a lot that's going on that is really good that is happening that you miss so often.
Let's just take right now. Sunday morning, group of people gathered together for one purpose, despite all of the stuff that's going on in the external world. Yeah, you're right.
Sometimes it's as simple as being in a position to be forced to look into yourself that you otherwise wouldn't be able to do. And that's a blessing.
I was just thinking that. Sometimes pain or difficulty pushes us to look at ourselves more deeply and maybe even to be grateful beyond what the external world might tell us. That's a beautiful example. I can tell you're still, that consciousness is still there. That's powerful. Yeah, Beth?
I can relate. Far mentioned, well, I can relate to what she's saying, and then talking about what the physiological, you know, things that happen when you're going through. And not feeling safe, like, you know, there's been a lot of times in life when I haven't felt safe. And so when I, and I'm not like small things, I guess, the like, for example, I'll live like a block down that way. It's open Victorian house, and we live on the bottom floor, and my daughter, she's 17. And the landlord said yesterday that they're selling the house. He said, you know, I might be here. So for me, when I feel anxiety, it's so intense in my body. Even like right now, I feel like every cell of my body is raw. So I had a fear. I had this like half put the way out to be able to say, I could go to see my psychiatrist, see if there is like every single thing. And like, it's just how I'm wired, you know, like it just my nervous system. It's just raw. And like, I don't know what but I guess, you know, it's and the frustrating thing is like I know I've been coming to UK for a long time, you know, gone to therapy for a long time. And I know, you know, think about what you say, like not having faith is form of faith, but it's like I know the tools, I know things in my brain, but my body is kind of like I can't control. Like my psychiatrist described it as like having a wound, and like it's just kind of raw. So when things happen, it's like this. That's how I feel. You know, it's fine. I think about my daughter as much as for more than myself. So it's like, I feel like it's like double. So I guess my question is, when it's in your mind, like that and asleep, and you know all the tools, but you don't count. You can't, you just like can't. I don't know what my thing is. Like, I guess, how can you get it out of such a heavy place, such a non-safe place?
Well, you did that by walking through the door this morning, didn't you? Made a choice about that. And I'm not trying to use that as a magic bullet or anything, but that's the truth. Right? You were responding to something higher, in the higher consciousness. And you knew it was there. No matter how you were feeling, you knew something deeper was there as well. And sometimes that's the learning. It's a bitch sometimes, but sometimes that's the learning to realize that no matter what's going on in my external world, no matter what's going on, even in the stuff that my physical body is holding on to, no matter what's going on, there's something more than that. I know that I can't define that.
Jerry, Barbara has had her hand raised for a long time.
Yeah, hi, John.
No, Barbara has had her hand raised for a long time.
Okay.
So speak.
Yeah, Barb.
Hi, everybody. You know, we come here every week, I feel like, to learn who we are, who we really are. And we're told that I have a body, but I'm not my body. I'm told to, or at least I try to wake up in the morning and align to my divinity. I've heard that here. I think that I'm attracted to the world and chaos and all of that because it reinforces the fact that I believe I'm a separated body. I'm separated from God is what I believe the world teaches us. But the fact is that I am one with God and I don't know it. I don't believe it. And I'm afraid to lose my separate self. I'm afraid to lose my identity. And as we sit here and talk about fear and the misery and all of this, I know that I tune into the news and it's like an addiction and it harms me. And I've gotten rid of a bunch of stuff. I don't watch violence. I won't even watch verbal abuse, all kind of stuff. But I still tune into the news and get upset. And I feel like it's an addiction. And the reason we do this is because I'm so afraid of losing my personality self. I'm scared to death of that. And my body is all important to me. It always has been, making it comfortable, making it happy. Just it's everything. I'm addicted to this body thing. But what I feel like we're trying to learn is the truth of who we are in all these books that we read here. And in the Course in Miracles, which tells us that that I'm spirit and I am a divine being. Well, I'm a divine part of God, and I don't know it, and I don't believe it. But that's why I read a lot of this stuff all the time, because I'm trying to remember. Something in me knows. That's why I'm here. A part of me knows the truth, and that's why I come here, is to be reminded all the time and to be with other beings who are also trying to be reminded of the truth of who we are. So that's it.
Perfect.
Hey, Jerry.
And that is the truth. We come here together. We join our hearts and minds together on a Sunday morning or a Tuesday evening or whenever it happens to be, to remind us of who we truly are.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Jim.
I absolutely concur with what Barbara said, that, and also what Greg had shared, that this attraction to the negativity, it appears that it's kind of baked into our, it becomes not it, we don't I don't believe we come into this incarnation with it baked into us, but it appears that what is fed to us from very, very little, it becomes our identification. That's what you said. We identify as that. And then going back to what Barbara just said, in terms of this, what we do here today on Tuesday, and the books we read, and our meditation helps me remind me who I truly am. But there's these tune-ups that I have to continue to do, because I'll forget that, and it's easy to go back to that which I had identified with. You know, it's like, you know, it's, I stretch it, but and it pops right back to the familiar, if that makes sense.
I think we're going to need to take a little time to pull all that together. Yeah, Linda?
Just real quick, if I can say that, I will say, don't be so hard on yourself. Life is hard now. And, you know, with the situation that you think, what the news you receive, oh, my God, you know, you're going to have to be looking for a new place to live. What about my daughter? So don't beat yourself up and address or recognize those feelings in your body and how you feel paralyzed. But I don't know how to deal with it, but recognize it, then again, breathe and say, okay, I've been through either this before or other things like it, and somehow I will get through. But you have a right to feel that way, because I think life right now is hard. And I think about that every day, how fortunate I am and how upset I get, and I'm in a fairly good situation. And I think about that every day. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how do families do it? How do mothers do it? Who are raising children on their own, how do fathers do it? So just, you know, just look how you come this far and how you handle things, and then that you'll probably do it again. But don't think that you're a failure or you're not capable, because you are.
Gary?
Yeah.
So I recently saw a study that where they had measured information going into the brain. And what they discovered was that information actually reaches the amygdala part of the brain first, which controls our emotions. At least that's what it said. And then a microsecond or a second later, it will hit the thinking part of our brain. And so we can get negative feelings before we even understand what's going on. Or we can get joyful feelings before we even understand what's going on. And so we need to understand that feelings are not always about how we're thinking about it. It's just it comes through that amygdala. I don't understand all that, but I'm aware that that happens. The other piece I would throw out is something that you taught us years ago, you and Jack. When I get to the point where I'm overwhelmed by my feelings, I do what you guys taught me to do, which is I find a quiet place to be and I pump those feelings. I make it as big as I possibly can. And in a couple of minutes, sometimes it's a minute, sometimes it's 5 minutes, but when I really have made this feeling go really big, really big, really big, really big, it just kind of dissolves and I can think again. So thank you for that.
Thanks, John. Let's all of us take a few minutes and put your stuff down. And close your eyes if you like. And for each one of us this morning, there is a bit of gratitude, healing. Not perfect, but better than it was. And I'm going to suggest that each one of us allow ourselves to be embraced by that sense of gratitude and healing that you've created here this morning. And allow the energy of these words to touch your being. Remember who you are. Remember who you are. Remember who you are. And even if it seems just a little spark of light or truth responds to that energy, go with it, breathe into it, blow onto it like you would a little spark in a fire to have it grow and expand. It's part of you. Remember who you are. And when you remember who you are, you remember who everybody else is as well. I am with you all days, even to the end of the world, Jesus said. The power of your divine consciousness, your higher consciousness, is always here, is always with you. I don't ignore your feelings. I don't pretend that they're going to go away right away. But to know when you remember who you are more than your feelings. Your feelings many times come from a sense of love, a desire to love more, to be more, to become more. Remember who you are. Deep breath. Stretch a bit. You can open your eyes when you're ready. in love and in gratitude. Thank you all for being here. And we will continue.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Have a wonderful week, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks.